There we go. I was a young man, and I was with a group of young people at Friday night vespers at somebody's house. It was somebody I didn't know. I was a call porter, so we ended up at all kinds of interesting churches and people's homes and stuff. And so somebody had invited us over for a Friday night vespers. And there's all these great young people there, and I see that there's a problem with the piano. I don't remember if it was a foot pedal or a leg or some problem with the piano. And I had to go over there and investigate and pull things apart and look at it and tinker. And I didn't have any tools. I didn't have permission from the owner. And there was all these other young people there. I kind of wish, if I could go back, I wish I could tell that 19-year-old young man, Jason, you can't fix the piano. The people are more important. Go hang out with them. I still have that fixer mentality, and I'm always thinking about something. And I think fixers are great people in my personal perspective. We're doers. We tackle problems that others can't or won't. And we do it whether we're qualified or not, which is disconcerting for some people, I'm sure. And there's always stuff going on in our heads. We're always thinking about some project, some list of to-dos that we've got. Over the holiday break, I had all the things I was doing at home. I was fixing this and installing that and whatnot. And then Christmas came, and I didn't do anything. I was a good boy. And I just hung out with the family on Christmas. And then my in-laws were there. And so Thursday kind of started the thinking again about projects. But then I got sick. And I can't think about projects when I'm sick. It just doesn't, my brain is not working. And so I was for several days not buzzing with ideas. And then Wednesday, January 1st, I was feeling good enough that my brain had started to kind of get back into gear. And Adeline came to me and she said, "My dresser is broken." And a very quick look at the dresser made me realize that there was no permanent fix that I could do. And so my brain just added another thing to my list, build a dresser for Adeline. That's just kind of how a fixer's brain works. Am I the only fixer in the room? I know of at least one or two or five or 10 more. Yeah, there's a bunch of us here. We've got these lists in our minds and we're always going and we see problems and we have solutions for them and ideas. And honestly, fixers are good, but we have problems. Like there is a significant character challenge that we struggle with, and it's called self-reliance. And you know, why do we need a plumber? A little bit of a video online, some tools maybe. Obviously, you have to have the right tools. And there you go. I can do my own plumbing. I don't need a tech guru. I don't need a cabinet maker. I can do this myself. At least 80% as well as a professional, right? Sometimes my wife doesn't like the 20% that I missed. But here's the thing. Self-reliance is a spiritual problem. And it's not that it's a problem to rely on your own skill and ingenuity when it comes to plumbing. But there are significant things that we need to recognize about trusting in and depending on God. And I'm not just talking about spiritual things. I'm talking about your career or your schoolwork or your finances, your scheduling, even your food on the table. This all is a resource given by God. We have food on the table because we work hard, we think. Right? We have money in the bank because we're frugal and we plan ahead. We're successful because we're skilled and we do work really well. You know, we work hard. And this is kind of the way that a self-reliant mind thinks. But these aren't true. I mean, they're kind of true. If you don't work hard, you're not going to be successful, sure. But the thing is, all of those resources, all of those skills, all of those potential comes from God. So in a very real sense, God is the one who gives us the success because he gives us the skill and opportunity to succeed. We have money in the bank not simply because we plan ahead and are frugal, but because God has blessed us with more than we need. We have food on the table because God has given us the ability to purchase that food or the skill to grow it. And honestly, he's the one that makes it grow. our self-reliance can hide the real source of all good things. I would be lying if I didn't say that and recognize that I bring my fix-it man, self-reliant mentality into my pastoral work. It's a very spiritual job that I have. And yet, it's easy for me to look around and see the problems, the broken relationships, the dysfunctional thing that happens, you know, the problem with the sound system, whatever it is that I see, like, oh, let me see if I can fix that. And there is a self-reliance that I'm tempted to bring into my ministry. At any one time, I bet most of us can look around this church and notice a dozen different issues. And for some of us, it's a relational issue that you notice. Some others are like, oh, there's a dent in the wall that needs to be fixed or whatever. You know, we all have our perspective, but I wonder if maybe our focus is wrong. Like my 19-year-old self looking at a piano when I should have been hanging out with the young people that were there with me. Maybe the focus is off when we think about the problems around us. Turn in your Bible to Exodus chapter 16, and we're going to look at the first few verses and the story that comes along with it. Exodus chapter 16. The Israelites had the wrong focus as they were leaving from Egypt. Keep in mind that they had just had miracle on top of miracle to get them out of Egypt. So many things that God had done for them. But once they got into the wilderness and their food ran out, all they could see was the problem in front of them. In Exodus 16, the Israelites came to the wilderness of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai. So they're quite a ways away from Egypt, and they've got quite a ways to go till they get to Canaan. And the whole congregation grumbled against Moses and Aaron, saying, "We should have died by the hand of the Lord in Egypt when we sat by the pots of meat and ate as much bread as we wanted. You have brought us out here to kill us with hunger." This is their problem. They see the issue. And did God have a plan? Yes, he did. And did God have all the resources necessary to accomplish his plan? Yes, he did. Had he proven himself faithful so far? Yes, he had. And so why were the people complaining? Why is it that they saw this problem and why did they think that there was no solution? It's because they lost their focus on God. They lost the perspective. They had become self-reliant, not realizing that every resource that they had belonged to God. And they were looking to themselves and their leaders for the solution. And this obvious problem didn't have a solution that they could imagine. Pretend with me, imagine yourself in their environment and just see if we can come up with a solution. You're in this throng of people, you've given your last piece of bread, broken it up between your five children, and your neighbor has no more food, and you know everybody is out of food. And you look around to try to figure out what the solutions might be, and there's just nothing in the desert there that can provide for a million plus people. It's impossible. And you can't imagine a solution. You look to your leaders and you realize that they're incompetent. They brought you out of Egypt and they had failed to supply the wilderness Costco with food. Nothing's available to go buy. You can't go shopping for it. You can't plant food and get a harvest quickly enough. There just isn't resources enough when you look around. Clearly, you've got a reason to grumble. Don't you think? I mean, if there's no solution, then the thing that you're left to do is grumble. I mean, your tummy's grumbling, your head is grumbling. Seems like your mouth should be grumbling too, right? Thankfully, God is patient, and even though they grumbled, God provided for them. And the day after they ran out of food, they had food from heaven laying on the ground that they could pick up. God didn't leave them without a solution. Exodus 17 describes another similar problem, and it's shortly after this grumbling over the food that they end up in a place where there was no water. And immediately they complain against Moses and all the leaders, and they're like, "Give us something to drink." as though Moses was the one that provided for them. They quarreled, the Bible says. They see an urgent problem, and they complain to their leader, and they complain to the wrong person. They were operating from a self-reliant mindset, relying on human resources, and they were dealing with a problem that was beyond their capacity. They could not bring water. Was God surprised at those problems? It was not a surprise for him at all. In fact, I suspect that God engineered those problems so that the people of Israel could recognize that they don't provide for themselves, that every resource they have comes from God, and that he alone could be the one that provided for them. You see, there's really no such thing as self-reliance. Even though us fix-it kind of people tend to think that we can rely on ourselves, the reality is that everything comes from God. Every breath that we breathe is a gift from God. Every bite that we eat, every sip that we drink is a gift from God. Every dollar in our banks, every mile on our car, every resource that we have access to is something that God has provided. And I think it's foolish if we rely on ourselves and fail to recognize that God is the resource, the source of all of our resources. Because if we rely on ourselves, we are bound to end up exactly where Israel was, with a need, a problem in front of us, and grumbling and complaining. In fact, I would suggest that if you find yourself grumbling and complaining, it's because you've lost your focus. Anybody ever grumble and complain? Yeah, a few hands are raised. Huh. Sometimes I think God has to pull back his resources, help us to see our great need simply so we can learn to trust him, so we don't forget who we're relying on. We're kind of like the Israelites in a way. As a church, we are on a path. We're going somewhere. We're a church on the move. Now, obviously, we're planted in Tri-Cities. We're not physically moving. We're not moving from Egypt to Canaan like the Israelites were. But God has us on a mission. Our mission is a little different than the Israelites. In fact, a few years ago, we identified our mission from the Bible, and we said, this is who we are, or what God wants us to be. A people that are knowing God and making him known as we anticipate his soon return. That's our mission. That's the path God has us on. It's a biblical path, and it's one that is God's direction for us. I think this statement, condensing our purpose, our mission, to this statement is helpful because it gives us focus. It helps us to pay attention to the things that are important. And it's a mission that recognizes the urgency of the time that we live in. We don't live in a time where we can just go on day after day, year after year, generation after generation, and nothing's going to change. We live in the time of the end. We recognize that all of the major prophecies in the Bible have been fulfilled. There's nothing in history or in politics. There's nothing in the world when it comes to natural disasters and things like this. There's nothing that needs to happen before Jesus comes. Everything's already taken place. And really what we're waiting for is Jesus in heaven to finish his mediatorial work as the high priest and to say, let those who are righteous be righteous still, let those who are wicked be wicked still, and then he's going to come. We are living in that context of Earth's history, and it's important for us to recognize that we are anticipating his soon return, which can make us a little like the Israelites in the wilderness because we see a problem in front of us. He has called us to go into all the world and take his gospel and make disciples. And I don't know about you, but that's a problem that's bigger than I can imagine a solution. Just look in the Tri-Cities. How many of us are here? 150? A few more watching online? How many needs are there in our community? How many relationships are there to develop? We don't have the capacity to do the gospel mission work just here in Pasco, much less the Tri-Cities, much less the rest of the world. And if we take that burden on ourselves, the mission God has given us, inappropriately, then we'll end up asking more of ourselves than we can give. It's impossible for you to help all of the homeless, to come beside every person who's dealing with an addiction, right? It's impossible for you to deal with the logistics of helping all of the single parents in our community, right? And that doesn't even enter the picture of the barriers to the gospel, the challenges that we have in communication and the differences in language and culture and background. Timing and the ability that people have to communicate and connect with us, right? Like, there's so many problems that we would have to face in order to get the gospel into our community in the way that we imagine that's necessary before Jesus comes. And we have a few solutions to this. The first is the fix-it solution, and there's a lot of us that like to do this. We see the problem, gospel to our community, so we write a check to a ministry that sends a book to every home in our community. Voila, the gospel is shared, right? Or we grab a great controversy or a glow tract and we go and we put it in somebody's hand. And then we walk away and we say our short prayer, Lord, please help them read that and be changed by it. And job done, the book is going to be the witness, right? Or maybe as a church, we organize a big program and we invite people to come. And there's a few people that do come. And we're a little disappointed that not as many came as we liked. And excited that God is working in the lives of those who did come, right? And in everything we do, doesn't matter what the solution we come up with is, we're going to fall short of God's, of the need that we recognize before Jesus returns. Does that make sense? We're a people that are very much in that spot in the wilderness without enough resources, but with a demand or a pressure on us to accomplish something that's beyond our ability. I wonder if maybe our focus is wrong when we pay attention to that problem in the way that I'm talking about. Maybe the focus shouldn't be on this big problem that we can't handle. You see, I'm not the one that provides the gospel for the world. In fact, Jesus said, if I be lifted up, will draw all men unto me, right? Jesus is the one drawing. It is his mission field. These are his children. My job isn't to take on God's responsibility. But I do have a responsibility in this mix, and God has promised to give me every resource necessary to accomplish it. And he's promised, he's asked you to be part of that, and he's promised to give you the resources that are necessary. But I think the focus shouldn't be on the problem or on the programs. It should be on Jesus. When we focus on the one who's leading us rather than Moses, right? Don't focus on me. if we're focused on me, that's gonna work out badly, or any one of us. The focus needs to be on our actual leader, the one who's providing for us and leading us and providing this mission. When we fix our attention on God, then we can go in the way that God has called us, each one individually, into our sphere of influence. And we can do the things that God has given us to do. Whether it's a big thing or a little thing, step by step, God can lead us in his mission field. Which leads us back to that first statement in this mission statement, knowing God. You see, if we don't know God, then we're not going to trust him. And we're going to be like those Israelites facing a problem without a solution, and all we're going to be able to do is grumble and complain. Or we're going to do something even worse, and we're going to decide that it doesn't matter. Taking the gospel to the world isn't an important thing, and we're just going to sit around and let whatever happens happen, which isn't God's intention either. Like, we need to be in this place where we're like willing, but submissive, surrendered to God and letting him lead and provide. We cannot trust a God that we don't know, though, which means we need to know him. We need to get to know him through his word and learn, like the Israelites did in the wilderness, that God is trustworthy and that his provision is enough. I don't think it's a coincidence that Jesus claimed to be the bread sent from heaven. When the Israelites said they needed food, Jesus claims a few hundred years later, I was the food that came down on that ground. And then later he says that he's the water of life. And Paul adds that he was the rock that wandered around with them in the wilderness and followed them to provide for them. Not only was he the water that satisfied their thirst, but he was the source of that water, the rock where the water came from. I think when we focus on Jesus, we have all we need. And when we lose our focus and we start focusing on the problems, then we're in trouble. If we learn nothing else in 2025 but to rely on Jesus as the source of every resource, then I think that we'll have come quite a far ways, don't you think? We'll have learned quite a lot. I'm beginning this year with a series called Looking Forward because I want us to focus our attention this year on Jesus. And I believe that when we focus on those right things, that we won't fall into the traps that we sometimes do as Christians. The complaining and the grumbling and the griping and the looking at each other and the comparing ourselves with each other and all the stuff that happens when we lose our right focus. In February of last year, we adopted this slogan, Serve One More. And it's just kind of like a qualifying statement to our mission statement, knowing God and making him known as we anticipate his soon return. How do we do that? How do we make him known? One way is to hand them that book. Here's a great controversy. You know, Jesus is coming soon. Better get ready now. And that's kind of a tendency that we can have as a church. We can sometimes focus our attention on, let's tell everybody this bit of truth that we have and move on. But when we say serve one more, we qualify that and we recognize that we don't want to just like throw some message out there. We actually want to do things in Jesus' way, in the same mindset and the same attitude that Jesus had and with the same tool set that he had, which includes serving. Jesus' method began with mingling and making friends. And then it extended to understanding and serving people's needs. And in that context, as we make friends, we can share the gospel and we can lead people to Jesus. Sharing the gospel is an outgrowth of the friendships that we develop as we serve others. And I want to explore that idea more on January 18 when we talk about the making him known part of this mission statement. Next week, we'll talk more about the knowing him and explore that in some depth. But I just want to give this context and kind of a really quick look at how this mindset can impact how we focus on things this year. It's really easy to take a book and give it to somebody or to throw this program and hope people come and be excited when people do. But when we look at Serve One More, we realize that this is a deeper investment that we're making than simply handing a book to somebody. It requires relationship. There's an expectation of friendship that goes along with this. And in some way, I mean, it's nice to bring 3,000 people to a program like Journey to Bethlehem. How many of you went to Journey to Bethlehem? Wasn't that great? That was a fantastic program. We should help again next year. It was really good. And 3,000 people came, and many of them were learning aspects of the gospel they hadn't ever known before, which I love that idea. And yet, it's incomplete. The gospel isn't just about inviting people to come to a program. Hey, come and do worship at our church. My pastor's got great sermons. Hopefully you can say that about our church. Come to this program that we're offering. It's fantastic music, or it's a really wonderful presentation about Jesus, whatever it is. That's not bad. You should do that. But that's not what the focus of the gospel is. Evangelism is about inviting people into your life. I'm going to say that one more time. Evangelism is about inviting people into your life, not just inviting them to your church. And if we have that mindset, we recognize that when we adopt people into the family of God, like that's what it means to become a Christian, right? Is that you become a child of the King and you're adopted into God's family. But that means that you're adopting people into your family. There's a relationship that goes along with that. And that's why I think we say serve one more, not 500 more. Because we can't honestly reach all those people in actual genuine relationship. I think it would be amazing if we, starting the beginning of this year, if we prayed, God, give me one friend this year, one friend that I can help journey with Jesus. What would that be like if each one of us in our church made a friend for Christ this year? A new person, maybe a neighbor, maybe somebody that you work with, and you invited them into your life, intentionally brought them in to your experience, and they're going to see how you walk with Jesus when you do that. And at some point, as you serve them and are friends with them, at some point, they might ask more questions about your faith, and you might have the opportunity to share the gospel, maybe start a Bible study. But what if instead of asking for a Bible study, you simply say, God, give me a friend that I can journey with Jesus with. I think that would be a transformative experience for our church. And maybe if we didn't focus on the big stuff, let God worry about the mission field. If we focused on the thing that God has put in front of us, that one step towards friendship, that one step towards the kingdom of God, I think that maybe we would see the task of evangelism as a much more doable thing. Jesus said that we shouldn't be anxious over what we eat or what we'll wear or where we'll sleep even. Instead, we're to live life faithfully trusting in the one who's promised to provide for us, which means that we should also live life faithfully trusting in the one who's promised to provide salvation to the world too. Like, this is something we need to put in his hands and trust to his provision. Looking forward, I think as we pay attention to where God is leading us, this concept of the mission statement, knowing God and making him known, serve one more, all this I think can be summarized in four words. Come, follow, go, and serve. These are the four basics, I think, of the individual and corporate experience of fulfilling this mission. First, I think we come to God in repentance. We come to the Word to know God, and we come together in fellowship and study, and we come together for worship. Coming is a really important part of this mission. It's part of knowing God. We have to come to him. And second, we need to follow. We need to follow Jesus. If he reveals something in his word to us, if he reveals a plan, a mission, a strategic idea for us, then we should follow Jesus in doing those things. And we should follow him in the mission that he's given this church. And then we need to go. God has said, go into all the world. And we need to go and make friends, I think. I think that's probably the most significant thing that we can do this year, is to say, I'm going to make a friend for Jesus. And as we go with a heart that is sensitive, a sympathy that is full, so that when you see people and their genuine needs, you can say, I'd like to help with that. And as we notice these things, let's serve. Let's actually pay attention to those problems and satisfy those needs as they come up. Let's let God pour his love through us to those friends that he's leading us to make and putting in our path. And maybe there will be a time this year that we get to serve not just the physical needs or the apparent ones, but the spiritual needs as well. And we can fill the hearts of people with the love of Jesus. It's easy for us, I think, to see the problems around us. It's the natural thing for us to do. Whether you're a fix-it person or just somebody that is really good at noticing problems, that's the way that we kind of do life. We look at stuff, we say, that's not how it should be, and then we tell other people that it's not how it should be, or we tell other people what our plans to fix it might be. But I think God is inviting us this year to not focus on our problems, not trust in our own resources and skills. He's inviting us to focus on him and the path that he's leading us on as a church. What's the next step? One of the reasons I think that the Israelites were so quick to complain is because they were really good forgetters. They had literally just walked out of the Red Sea and finished their song of praise to God as they stepped into the wilderness and realized they didn't have any more food. The God who opens the sea seems like he's got some power beyond our own ability, right? Why didn't they trust him when they ran out of food? It's because they forgot. They allowed their focus to shift from the God of miracles and provision to their own resources, which means that you and I probably have the same need. We need to remember. And so I'd like to suggest that this year we make a banner and we post it maybe right there on that wall and put on the top 2025, just for context, because we'll have to remember it for years from now, right? 2025, and then have a big open space on the bottom where we fill it with stuff. Every baptism, every cool experience and answered prayer, and I don't know, anything that happens where we see God working in our church this year, let's put it on that banner. So by the end of the year and all throughout the year, we'll be able to see those faces and those experiences and the logos from something that we did or whatever it is that we put on there, and we'll be able to say, Lord, you have led us faithfully in the past, and I believe that you will lead us in our future. What do you think? Does that sound good? And maybe we can say 2025 and put under there an emphasis. Maybe it should be year of prayer. Because we need to keep our focus on the one who provides. We need to pray that God will lead us in each step. So maybe it should be year of prayer. Maybe it should be year of promise. Because God has promised to fulfill, God's promises will be fulfilled. And we need to keep our focus on the fulfilling of God's promises. Or maybe we should call it the year of service. January 11th, so that's a week from today, we're going to have a business meeting right after potluck. And I hope that you'll all stay and hang out as we talk about what God's plan is for this coming year. And maybe during that time, we can have a little bit of a moment to decide what we put on that banner to focus our attention this year. Does that sound good? If we forget how God has led us in the past, then we're going to fail to trust him in our future. It's not very long in chapter 17 of Exodus. It's not very long after they struggle with their drinking. They don't have any water. God provides water for them. They face the Amalekites. And the Amalekites come to them in battle, and they are not trained. They don't have soldiers. They don't have the tools that they need to fight this battle. They're going to lose, guaranteed. Same problem with their food, same problem with their water, but this time they trusted in God. And Moses stood with his staff outstretched up on the hill, his arms raised to heaven. It was the same staff that he had raised when he announced the plagues in Egypt. It was the same staff that he raised over the Red Sea when God parted the Red Sea. And this was the staff of God's divine presence and helping hand. So when he had that staff raised up, the Israelites would push the Amalekites back. And when his hand got tired and it lowered, they were pushed back themselves. And I think that's the same thing that we have to experience today. When we raise our hearts and our hands towards heaven and we recognize that he is the source of every good thing, then we will succeed in the mission that he's called us to do. And when we begin to focus on the problems and on our own self-reliance, then we're going to be beaten back, guaranteed. So let me ask you to make a decision at this moment. Will you make a commitment that this year you will look to Jesus and trust him to provide everything? Will you make that commitment with me this year? And one more, will you make a commitment with me that you will keep God's fulfilled promises in your recent memory? Don't forget how God has led us. Will you make a commitment to remembering how God has led us this year? Let's do this together. Trusting in Jesus, keeping our focus on him, and remembering how he has led us in our recent past.